Hi there, I'm Olivia.
And I'm Ollie.
And our dads have teamed up to record their CD version of their world-famous course, Art of Being Brilliant.
Or at least that's what my dad says. You know, that it's world-famous.
Do you think he's exaggerating? I mean, if the course worked, then our dads would be world-famous and brilliant.
My dad got recognised in Sainsbury's once. Isn't that famous? And he's been on the telly.
And my dad gets to travel all over the place to do his courses.
Cool. What, like America and Tokyo and stuff?
Yeah, I think so. And last week, he was in Blackpool. I think he's famous there.
Anyway, enough small talk, Liv. Suppose we should introduce the CDs. Dad says he didn't want cheesy music. He thought we'd do a better job. They wanted everyone to know that this is unscripted and unrehearsed.
What, like they're making it up as they go along?
Pretty much. But my dad absolutely loves doing his research and he really believes in what he's talking about. He says he wanted to record something that was so simple it could be understood by a 10-year-old. I guess our dads just wanted to share their messages with as many people as possible.
And get stinking rich. If loads of people buy these CDs, we'll be able to get a big house in the country with horses and donkeys and giraffes and eat Haribos every day.
My dad says success isn't about having loads of money. He reckons it's about being happy.
But I'm already happy.
Exactly. Most 10-year-olds are. I think it gets harder to be happy as you get older. When you're really old, like 25 or something, and you've got a job and kids and a mortgage and bills to pay, you can get stuck in a way of thinking. I think it's called a rut. These CDs are all about changing the way you think. So anyway, Liv, tell me the best thing about your dad. This is The Art of Being Brilliant. So what's he brilliant at?
Well, he's a nice bloke and everyone seems to like him. Oh, and he's dead funny.
Tell me about it. My dad's always very happy, but when he gets together with your dad, he can't stop laughing.
Let me get me laughing out of the way before we start.
I think laughing's good, though, because you've ever listened to Terry Wogan on BBC Two and they do these, Janet and John books. Remember the old Janet and John books and someone's put a twist on them? And half of it is Terry Wogan, can't even think. They're all laughing and they just start. So how would you start, sir?
Okay, all right. Well, shall we start with an introduction? Welcome to the CD version of The Art of Being Brill. My name's Andy Cope and opposite me is my good mate. Yourself, you are?
Andy Whittaker.
And basically what we thought we'd do is we run a course that we boldly call The Art of Being Brill, and what we thought, not everybody can get on The Art of Being Brill, can they? Or some people come and they want to know a bit more, or some people don't give a monkeys, but you might be sat in a car with somebody playing this CD. So whatever your reason for listening to it, welcome aboard. Yeah. What you're going to find in this recording is it perhaps isn't going to go as smoothly as some of the slick American Guru CDs that I've listened to, which are so cheesy they make me feel physically ill. But what we thought we'd do is... as long as you've got an open mind on it, there might be a few mistakes. We might repeat some stuff. But I don't think that really matters, does it, mate? Does it matter?
Yeah. No.
It's unscripted. I remember watching... I know you're not into football, but I watch... in the World Cup, there was a programme, Badil and Skinner. Frank Skinner and David Badil, who were big football fans. And they used to do this thing where they sat on a sofa and they just talked, unscripted, talked about football. And I thought it was really good fun. And I know you're not as old as me, but Rhys and Jones, Griff, what's his face, and Mel, what's his face, used to do his head-to-head thing.
Mel and Jones.
So that's what we thought we'd do.
Smith and Jones is
not overly prepare anything. In fact, not prepare anything at all. Turn up and talk about The Art of Being Brill, because we reckon we've got some stuff that really, really works.
I would just like to say I've been preparing for this all my life.
Bless you. Good lad, aren't you? Don't edit that one out. Now, so can you just describe the surroundings, mate? Go on, where are we sitting?
Well, we are in Nottingham, in a recording studio, I'm now a fond believer in great marketing, we're actually in Mark's garage, surrounded by padded foam tiles.
Listen.
Which are actually, some are pointy and some are straight. Now, I don't know whether that was a... buy a straight one, get a pointy one free deal, or there's something to do with the sound there. I reckon it's quite high tech.
It's so a bit like if you ever get caught in war and they put you in this sort of padded cell, then this is what it's like. We've got two microphones, we're sitting opposite each other, we've got a bottle of water each, we've got a bag of jelly babies, and that's it. We're going to have a chat. So we're two blokes who basically share a philosophy, a sense of humour, and a desire to get some key messages across. So promise, I think, my promises are that we won't try and give any big words or stuff that we don't understand. I know you know some weird stuff that I don't really understand, but if we can steer a little, if it goes weird, I'm going to pull you back into reality and say, Andy, shut up, don't understand it. So who are you and where are you from, mate?
Well, my name's Andy Whittaker, and I always like to introduce my sessions. I always say...
You're having a jelly baby. What a stupid time to eat a jelly baby.
You didn't tell me, did you? You can probably tell by the smooth, suave, sophisticated, debonair public schoolboy accent that I'm not from round here, if obviously you are in Nottingham or the East Midlands. I am from sunny Morecambe up in Lancashire, recently voted the third worst place to live in Britain. Which makes you kind of proud. You may have your holidays booked there this year. Possibly not. I like to call it the Australia of the North. Not because we have sunny weather and barbecues. It's now everyone who comes out of prison in Manchester and Liverpool gets rehoused there. Unfortunate for me, I've moved on to bigger and better things. Put everything into practice that we're going to talk about for the duration of the CDs. And I now live in Mansfield. Recently voted the second worst place to live in Britain. So that's kind of me. I met Andy a number of years ago. Now he was running a course, quite a, if you believe, getting on the a little bit of a weird thing. If you believe in fate, or once you kind of, you know, set yourself a direction or a goal, and the universe comes together to try and help you achieve that goal. We met quite by chance, wasn't it?
Brought us together, Andy. Yeah. That's almost quite romantic, isn't it?
We met quite by chance, didn't we? I was working on the reception in a brothel, and Andy walked in.
Come on.
No, we met on a course, didn't we? I was coaching on a course. You came along. And that was it, yeah. We've been working together now for maybe about, 5-6 years?
Oh, yeah. Seems longer, mate, somehow. Seems forever. Yeah, good. So what do you know? Tell me about all these qualifications that you've got.
Qualifications? I am a qualified, certified trainer of neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP. And NLP sometimes gets a little bit of...
You've got some woodwork.
I've got a GCSE E-grade in woodwork as well.
Yeah, important that the listeners know.
I've got sitting girls, actually, when I was in the army. Joined the army, following my father's advice. Join the army, son, you'll see the world. Spent 3 years in Reading, running around a field with a bush on my head at 5 o'clock in the morning. Nice one, Dad. But yeah, no, I've got a National Craftsman as well, City and Guilds. Put a spanner in my hand, it all goes wrong. But I've got the quality. But I think that suits, actually. It's very much, that kind of fits in with this, because a lot of people know a lot about personal development. And a lot of people have read a lot of books. And even me, even after becoming a trainer of NLP, which I'll talk about in a little while, it didn't necessarily transform my life. So it's not the knowing. Like, I'm a qualified 100% mechanic on the outside. But like I say, it's not the knowing, it's actually the doing. Mm. It's actually being able to, I suppose, use the tools you've got and put it on. I think that's the beauty of the art of Brill, is it's really simple.
Spot on, mate.
It's really simple, yeah.
Can I just chip in there? Because I mean, my background is retail management. That's a posh way of saying I used to work at WH Smith. I actually really enjoyed working after I'd left uni. But then I retrained to be a teacher and fell into adult education and stuff. But I used to think it was about the big words. I used to think it was about the theory stuff. And I spent the first 5 years of my sort of academic life delivering sort of some fairly high-level management leadership programs, scouring all the textbooks for the big words and the management theories and the interlocking circles and the pyramids and get a flip chart and, let's do a diagram. Because I thought that's what it was all about. And I did that for about 5 years until I realised I've been doing it wrong. It's not what people want at all. In fact, it's not about big words. That's exactly what the art of being brilliant isn't about. It's not the big words. It's the doing. It is very much in the doing. And I think that there's definitely mileage in cutting out all the nonsense that other people talk about and boiling it down to some key factors, which is, it's all right knowing it, but as you say, doing it is the difference. And I always think everybody can be brilliant. Everybody is brilliant occasionally, sometimes, almost on a sort of sporadic, random basis. We all have those times when we feel like we can take on the world. But for most people, it is random, and it is completely by accident that they end up feeling great. And where we're coming from is, having studied various things for the last few years, is about how we can learn to feel more happy and more positive. And once we've learned that and you've practiced it and it becomes a habit, then without preaching too much, you can have a better life. Yeah. So my belief is that we can So you stick with this CD, the good and the bad of it, and put it into practice, and you'll have a better life. Oh my God, how exciting is that?
Sounds
all right. It does, doesn't it? So can I just set the scene for what we want to do on the CD package? Is perhaps tell a few stories and a few anecdotes, maybe have a laugh. Well, hopefully we will have a laugh. I want to tell you a little bit about, Andy's going to talk to you a little bit about NLP, but perhaps not call it NLP. We'll talk about how your mind works, subconscious, conscious mind, that kind of stuff. Give you an introduction to positive psychology. See, Andy and I believe in the same things. We deliver things in a slightly different way with a different perspective, but we've pretty much got the same sort of core values in common. So introduce positive psychology and then talk about six main points that we want to get across. And see how it goes, really. But interspersed with a few stories and a few anecdotes and maybe a bit of theory, because I can't help myself sometimes.
You love your theory.
Yeah, I love my theory, really. but if it goes too far, you'll rein me in. And if you go too far off on one of your, you know, your conscious, unconscious things that I don't understand, I'll rein you back in. And it's aimed, really, for somebody who's driving in a car, sick of Radio 5 Live, because it's just the same all the time, isn't it? And Radio 4 is just a bit highbrow. Radio 1's just full of Chris Moyles.
Or if you've got no mates.
Yeah. So that's the target market. So where do we start, mate? Should we start with... what should we start with?
Do you want me to start briefly with kind of the NLP a bit, because I've mentioned it. And,
yeah, go on.
Because I think it's quite, kind of...
Have a jelly start. Baby while you're talking.
Yeah, help yourself. Yeah. Well, you bought them. The NLP, I first attended an NLP course. I'd recently been divorced. Wasn't happy. Particularly in my career, which is, I suppose it's coming across, it's a bit of a story, isn't it? You hear all these gurus, they've all been bankrupt and life's been horrendous, and then personal development kind of turned it round for them. So I suppose it's similar to that, but I definitely wasn't happy, and I think when a number of areas of your life fall down, you start to take action. You think, right, this needs sorting. Whereas with someone, you know, your family life's all right, relationships are all right, but they hate the job, they kind of put up with it.
Yeah.
You know, until it, so it kind of, it got
your life
too
had imploded,
much.
Mate. That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. I'm just carrying my jelly babies.
Quite depressed me now. I never thought of it like that. So
you could jump off a tall building or the option.
Yeah, I don't think it was as bad as that, you know, the old jumping off a tall building there. I'm not very good with heights. I don't think I could do it.
No, if you're going to do it,
anyways,
you're going to do it.
Should we save this for the suicide CD?
Okay. That's a bonus CD at the end.
If you are planning it, step back, we'll listen to the rest of it. But anyway, I saw this advertisement in a magazine, quite, again, if you want to believe in fate or the universe or whatever it was, I was actually in a dentist. And I opened this magazine, and I can't remember what it was called. It's a well-known magazine, a spiritual magazine. Oh, and I can't think of the name of it for the life of me. But anyway, this had been left with, I think, the 1976 Top Gear magazine and stuff like that. So I picked this up, and Airpresso, there was an advertisement for NLP. Transform your life, earn loads of brass, attract your perfect partner. I thought credit card was out before I finished reading the ad.
Yeah.
You know, this is it for me. Didn't know what it was. But if you can do that for me, I'm off. So went down to London, 50 of us in a room, sat there not really kind of knowing what it was about. And the trainer came onto the stage with what could only be described, I suppose, as theatre. He like floated. He didn't step. He could... And he had...
So the dry ice, the smoke, the fireworks. Lovely.
Yeah. Made it better, did it? Don't let the facts get in the way of a good story. But he kind of just, appeared on stage. And one thing I first noticed, he had cords on.
Will you stop fidgeting, mate? Because this microphone's pointing at you. Every time you scratch part of your anatomy, you...
Sorry.
You stop scratching.
It's always to enjoy life. So he came on stage and he had cords on and like a big... It wasn't a blouse he had on, but it certainly wasn't a shirt. You know, this big flaring purpley thing. And before it even started, he said, "Are there any questions?" And I thought, yeah, actually, I've got a question. And went straight up, you know, "What is NLP?" He went, "Andy." I went, "Yeah." He said, "Can I call you Andy?" I said, "That's what's on badge." He said, "What a fantastic question to start with." He said, "NLP," he said, "it's an attitude of curiosity, but not just curiosity as we are of adults, a childlike curiosity. You know how curious you used to get as a child? You could look at a beetle in complete awe for hours, wondering what it was going to do next. And how curious you used to get about Christmas. I always remember I used to start getting excited about Christmas, you know, usually around August. It's that kind of curiosity. But not only is it curiosity, he said, it's a methodology that leaves behind a... Do you ever wish you'd never asked a bloody question?
Yeah, tell you what, he's going on a bit with his flowy...
Going on with the whole thing. But then basically he got onto, in my eyes, the crux of NLP, and I am fairly well kind of, I would say, qualified on the subject now, kind of one-to-one coaching with people, obviously delivering it in trainings. And I think you've mastered something when it becomes simple again.
But NLP isn't simple. That's why I'm not a fan.
It truly is. You've just not kind of understood the technique side of it. And I think people like to overcomplicate it and possibly make themselves sound important. But the crux of NLP, here it is in a nutshell. If there's somebody somewhere achieving something or doing something, so, you know, they've got a brilliant life, brilliant partner, you know, great career. If someone's doing that, anyone can do it.
But see, I'm already, my heckles are rising. I'm already thinking, sorry.
No,
but
let me...
We shouldn't have done these jelly babies, should we?
I'm not saying it's easy, but they're doing something. So when you bring it back to the art of Brill, the top 2%, as we'll talk about, are putting these super six into process on a daily basis. Now, NLP just takes it a little bit deeper in talking about your beliefs and your values. But I think the best metaphor I heard, it was like baking a cake. So if anyone's ever done any baking... Or any form of cooking from a recipe, you get the recipe and you've got what you need to do and the exact text with the ingredients, the amounts, the quality, and then you've got a picture of what it looks like. So if you get the ingredients exactly the same quality, exactly the same amounts, you bring them together exactly the same as the recipe tells you, you get the temperature of the oven exactly right and you get your timings right, you will get the picture.
Mm.
Something slightly wrong, you'll get something... similar.
Mm-hmm.
The more you get wrong, the further away you get from this thing. So life is exactly the same. If people put... Now, everyone's life is going to be slightly different. We're not saying that, but it's the same kind of thought process.
Well, they call it modelling, don't they? They take a successful person, you model what they do, and you're supposed to get the same result.
In a nutshell.
Yeah.
But a lot of us, after the thing, a lot of us, as Richard Wilkins puts it, from Broadband Consciousness, we all have this script, OK? So, or... things happen to us. So we kind of arrive pretty much perfect, you know, if you've got all your faculties, etc. And then your environment gets kind of imprinted on you.
Yeah.
So a lot of us have a lot of baggage that we need to undo before we possibly even sometimes even feel worthy of a brilliant life or whether we deserve it. So that's when it gets complicated. But I think what we need to do, if we get people to a stage where they actually think, I can do something, we empower people to maybe look into it in more depth, then I think that's cool. But that's in a nutshell.
I think I understood most of that, and I think the people driving down the M1 listening to this will probably understand most of that, matey. I could pick it to bits, but we're perhaps not here to pick NLP to bits. We're here to move it on a bit, because I also studied NLP, and it was a good course, and I enjoyed it, and understood little bits and bobs of it. But I'm more interested in positive psychology. I've been studying that now since 2003 at the University of Loughborough. Hopefully one day we will get that PhD, but it's still a little way off. But what I came across was positive psychology, the work by a guy called Marty Seligman, which really tuned into me, because I'd studied psychology at uni and it had been interesting, but big, thick textbooks crammed full of people with problems. I learned all about phobias, disorders, anxiety, depression, paranoia, anything that could go wrong with you. We would learn about it, but it was going to be a great career because you'd be able to fix people. And how noble was that going to be? But the assumption was somebody would come and lie on the couch and tell you about their problems. So I suspect it's quite depressing studying it, actually, because you're studying, obviously, quite depressed people. But what I'm trying to say is the underlying assumption of positive psychology came from you had to be ill in order to tap into... normal psychology, not positive psychology, was you would have to be ill in order to see a psychologist. So... and that was all well and good, and I studied it, and I really enjoyed it, but it never really inspired me. And then I came across this positive psychology sort of revolution that's going on. And what we discovered was that, how do I say this? You know the diagram I want to do a diagram, but I haven't got a picture. How do I do a diagram on a CD?
Well, it's easy. There's a line at the top.
Okay.
And a line at the bottom.
I'll put my hand at the top of my head and one hand at my chin. How's that?
Yeah, that's cool, yeah.
And then what?
So you've got your top 2%ers at the top.
Okay, gotcha. Right, so you have to imagine, basically, we've all got a feel-good factor and a feel-bad factor. So during your day, we oscillate between feeling like you can take on the world, like you're the best you possibly can be, you've got confidence, you've got passion, you've got exuberance, you feel sort of well, I guess ultra-confident and very positive. So that's your top line of where you can exist. And then there's a bottom line, also your psychological profile. There's the bottom end of how you can feel. So that's when you're feeling drained and a bit exhausted. And I always describe it like when you get up and go, has got up and gone. So you're feeling like the world's against you. You might be stuck in a traffic jam. It might be raining. You might have a hangover. You might be poorly. You might be in a difficult meeting. You might have lost your job. There's a million and one things that can drag you down to this sort of lower end of how you feel, into a sort of apathy, really, or even worse than that, as almost a depression. Basically, it's if I can just survive today, maybe tomorrow will be better. And we're basically, if you map your profile, you exist somewhere between feeling great and feeling lousy. And what we, what positive psychology comes from is the fact that the majority of people, for one reason or another, fall into the middle category of feeling sort of okay. In fact, we're closer aligned to the bottom of that diagram than we are to the top of the diagram. So we reckon that about more than 90% of the people are a million miles away from feeling as great as they could. And that's what psychology, that's what I studied at uni, is, well, what can we do for these people? How can we remedy their situation? Positive psychology is about the people at the top end. So the people who are feeling good and fantastic most of the time. And for me, that was, well, I'd never considered that. Who are these people? You know, where do they live? What do they do? How the hell can they feel happy and positive the majority of the time? So I started to study them, started to read up on them. In fact, started to even do questionnaires and go and meet them. And we found out some stuff about them that I guess will come later in this CD. But for me, it was really invigorating because I came alive with it. It was the first time, I think, how old was I? 36. The first time I'd ever really enjoyed studying. And I'm thinking, I want to know about these people. I want to be one of these people because I can see that it would help me as a parent. I would say it would help me do my training better. It would help relationships better. It would help me across the board. So that's what I set out to do in 2003. And now our aim, well, my aim is to get this on the syllabus in schools, actually, and get it across to teachers, parents, teenagers, anybody really.
I think just to add to that, what you were saying, you know, about actually studying psychology and studying problems, it's kind of what you're around a lot of the time has an effect on you. You know, you can't help it. I'm sure I've got a friend who's an ambulance man, or person, I should say. That's what I'm politically correct.
Good lad.
And they have therapists, you know, because they see horrendous things. So they have to unload it. So all the time, if you're studying problems, it's going to have an effect on you. And it's kind of the society we live in now. Yeah, you don't have to watch the news, don't you?
Oh, tell me about
it. You know, murder, war, famine.
Well, at the time of recording, we've got swine flu.
Swine flu, that's a good one. That's and swine flu, it's brilliant, isn't it? All these problems. And people watch this, especially because we have done some sessions in schools. I was working up in Newcastle and talking to the kids there, they believe that's how the world is.
Mm.
But it's not. It's just kind of one take on it. And and they kind of say, oh, you know, they try and cheer you up at the end of the news by saying, on a lighter note, Tiddles a cat was served from a tree.
They've cut that now, mate. That used to be RTN News, News at 10. They've cut the last...
Well, I've not watched the news.
I'm not watching the news as well. It's very depressing, isn't it? Good. I've read something actually the other day that really worried me. In fact, I heard it on the radio. Life speeds up as you get older.
But life gets faster,
right? And mine's already fast.
Do you know why? That do you know why I've got a theory on? Not so much a theory. I think it's something I've picked up from a book. It's basically when you're a kid, you live in the moment from moment to moment. Especially, like when you're born, you're purely an unconscious mind or subconscious mind or whatever you want to call it. You've got no conscious faculty. You know, you don't question things. Mm. So if you say to a 2 or 3 year old, "Moon's made of cheese," they go, "Nice one."
Yeah.
No question of whether it's not, and that's why you live in a one. Obviously, if you've got kids in the car, ladies and gents,
the moon is made of cheese, of course it is.
Plug their ears up now, because it's also like when you're a kid, you believe in Santa Claus, don't you? Santa Claus. Yeah, sorry about that, mate. I think it's about time now, but you've been 42.
Oh,
Is the Argos catalogue, pick something.
I'm very jelly baby to get over the shock.
You live in that wonderful world, and I always remember as a kid, I used to have two, you know, I used to go everywhere, two speeds, was flat out and stop. I used to run everywhere, do whatever I was doing. But whatever I was doing, I was always enthralled in it.
Yeah.
Or I was bored. But then I was enthralled in the boredom as well. I was never worrying about the future. Yeah. I certainly wasn't thinking about the past. As you become an adult, that's why it appears as if time speeds up, because we're never actually in the moment or in the time.
Well, I heard this old dear interviewed on the radio. I think she's 84, so I'm Radio 4. It's a while ago now, listening to it on my journey somewhere. 84, and she said, She said, I don't put my Christmas card list away anymore, she said. I'll leave it on the table because I'm going to need it again very soon. and the old day, basically, Christmas comes around like that quickly for her.
I think Billy Connolly was the same. He said, my life now, one of the last things I saw him is, happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, Merry Christmas, Merry Christmas, Auld Lang Syne, Auld Lang Syne, and that was it, just the three
well,
songs.
Well, like, if I could just steal a Jack Black off you that... not Jack Black the actor, but Jack Black the guru, the Mind Store guru, who's an exceptional speaker, actually. But he told a thing when I went to London, and he was absolutely spot on. He said, because bearing in mind Jack Black is the guru, that when we're all his little disciples and 200 of us turn up in this auditorium to listen to him, and he's all mysterious, he comes on this, you know, he floats on with his purple dress. He's very grounded, he's from Glasgow, clothes. For God's sake, so he's not going to wear your big purple floaty blouse. But he comes on and he said, he stood there, he could hear a pin drop, and we were all waiting for Jack to start, and he said, I won't do the Scottish accent, but he said, and this was about September, he said, on October the 1st, he said, the world will change. And we're all like, oh, wow, Jack, what do you know? What's going to change? He said, because when you come to work on October the 1st, he said, it'll be Christmas. He says, all the little people will stay behind in Sainsbury's and they'll put all the Quality Street out, and there'll be two aisles of Christmas cards in Tesco's. And he said, the schools will start rehearsing for the nativity plays. So, he said, and this is his words, not my words, he says, the council estates will be lit up. Yeah, well, I know where he's going with that. Yeah, that they switch the lights on about early October. And then he says, he goes into his serious mode again, and he says, on Boxing Day, the world will change again. Well, why is that, Jack? Why? What's going on, Jack? And he says, sofas, you'll need a sofa. DFS will be telling you on the ads, you need a sofa. He says, oh, you'll have this strange desire to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go queue at Next for the sale. I mean, what sane human being would want to do that? But he says, all of a sudden you'll be gripped with sale fever. And then he goes through his routine and he says, Easter time, he says, the world will change again. He says, holidays, you'll need a holiday. You've got to book your holiday quick, because the holidays are running out. And Jack said exactly what you were saying there. He said, you go from sort of Christmas, sofas, holidays, Christmas, sofas, holidays, Christmas, sofas, holidays, Christmas, sofas, holidays, dead. And I'm sitting in the audience going, oh, he's right, isn't he? And it goes so quickly. And my belief is that life is too valuable to try and be getting it over with. There's I'm going to talk too much, but there's thing, destination addiction, that I've come across recently. I've read it in a book by Robert Holden. And he argues, absolutely, I agree with him. He says that the vast majority of working people in this country on Monday morning when the alarm goes, even if you love your job, it doesn't really matter. The point is, the alarm goes at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock, whenever it is, and most people get out of bed with a sort of, oh, here we go again. And destination addiction means that what we're doing is we are, unconsciously, our objective is to get through the week. So Monday morning... Yeah. Got to get to the weekend or the end of the day or got to get through the week. And I'm interested in that concept, because I agree. I think that a lot of people have got that mentality. I understand it. I've had that mentality in the past myself. But what if, Andy lad, what if your objective wasn't to survive the week or get through the week? What if we could implant an objective in people to enjoy the week? Or what if your primary purpose became to inspire people? Then what I'm saying is that slightly different way of thinking would turn you away from being a zombie like the rest of the population who's going through life trying to get it over with. And it goes, you start to have more purpose, you start to have more meaning, you start to get out of bed with some enthusiasm. And that is a very transferable thing. So if you're enthusiastic and positive about life, guess what? The spooky thing is people around you will respond differently. And that is, for me, one of the core things from The Art of Being Brill. So what do you think to that, John? Jelly Baby, mate, or are you?
No,
nodded off. You're not,
Put your eyes open. No, it's right. Just kind of the one thing to add to that as well is, you know, you say people they'll get up on a Monday and they're looking forward to the weekend.
Yeah.
But then the majority of people, when the weekend comes, they're then dreading Monday.
Yeah.
So they don't enjoy the weekend.
No. I used to have that Monday morning feeling. You know, that I used to be in a job that I didn't particularly like, and I had that Monday morning feeling, that sort of impending sense of doom.
Yeah.
It used to kick in about Sunday lunchtime.
Time slows down then.
I was depressed from about Sunday lunchtime onwards because Monday comes next. And it wasn't fairly recently that I twigged that I spend a seventh of my life on Mondays. It's far too many of them to be depressed about.
Definitely.
So it's about, for me, hopefully this CD and the messages we're going to give is a real wake-up call.
From that, let's tell the people who are listening now. So who is the Art of Being Brilliant? Who is it relevant to? Who, you know, If there's any, who can do it and who can't do it?
Who can do it? Well, I think any living sentient human being has got potential to be more positive and upbeat than they currently are. This isn't about going off the scale and being some happy clappy sort of, well, hey, credit crunch, isn't that good news? Because somebody's going to punch your lights out, yeah? I mean, I heard Andy speaking at a do this morning, and he said, just tell about people who are too happy, because I thought you put it very well.
I think there is. There's people who are out there who are too happy, and they get on your wick.
They do, mate.
If you wake up in the morning and your house has burnt down, your dog's dead and your partner's left you, the last thing you need is somebody going, every cloud, one door closes, another one opens, plenty more fish in the sea.
No, you're going to have to strangle them, aren't you? That's too far, too much, too ridiculous.
That's not what it's about. I think going back, Steve McDermott, who's got a wonderful book, a bit of advertising, Steve, 39 and a half ways to be a complete and unfailing
in life. Oh, mate, your recommendation,
yeah. He says, I saw him speaking once, and he said there was someone in the hospital bed. They only had a few hours to live, and they got all the family round and got the kids and everything. And he said, right, guys, everyone, stand round. I've got something to say. At least I made budget. And die. And I think the point of that is sometimes we do with the destination addiction and stuff like that. I'm not saying budgets aren't important. They are, but they're not the ultimate thing you're going to be remembered for as a person. And I think we've all had people in our lives who have inspired us, and they're not these super extraordinary people. They are in their own way, but it's not how we kind of envisage it. It's kind of teachers, the odd teacher you will remember. I'm sure most of you will have a teacher who you thought was fantastic because they, you know, they saw a little something in you, or they inspired you, or a family member. I think you were saying this morning, we've all got someone who, at a family do, you can't wait for that person to get there.
Because you know the party will really start when they walk through the door. Exactly. In fact, when the car pulls up in the car park, the kids start going wild. Oh, yeah, he's here, it's going to be great.
That's what the Art of Being Brilliant is about. It's not about, because some people, they always think, oh, then I'm going to have to be some worldly, you know, I'm going to have to be Gandhi or Nelson Mandela or something. That's the top 2% is where it really isn't. Because I always use the analogy, you know, that there are people out there that leap out of bed, big smile on the face, open the window, the sun comes shining in, they look back, the perfect partner's there, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer, Tom Cruise, Will Young, whatever. They put on a silk dressing gown, go downstairs, the kids are lined up on the breakfast bar, perfect. Morning, father, morning, mother, morning, children, are you well? Wonderful. How's school? Straight A stars all the way. Oh, wow. And they walk outside and there's a double garage and they open it and there's a Bentley and a Ferrari and they think, what should I take to work? Well, doesn't matter. Because I've planned, I don't need to be in till lunchtime. And they walk down the drive and there's a big sun behind them and all the birds and squirrels land on their shoulders and off they go. That's kind of the image people think that's the life they need to lead to be successful. Mm. But it's really not that, is it? I think it's about you as an individual being you at your best.
Absolutely.
That's when you've
I once came across a delegate who gave me quite a hard time on the course. He was saying, he says, you're asking me to be somebody, I'm not a happy person, you're asking me to be somebody I'm not. And I said, no, I don't want you to be anybody else, I want you to be yourself brilliantly. And I think that is the main point. It's taking the best of what you've already got and making the most of it, and perhaps losing some of the bad habits and accentuating what you do really well. And the principles, when we introduce them, you'll probably be driving in your car thinking, well, I already knew that. Yeah. In fact, you know, I went once again, had somebody stay behind after a course, and he said, oh, I'm a busy man. I've spent all day listening to you telling me stuff I already knew at 9:30. And I said, well, that's fantastic. You already knew it. Have you been doing it? And back to your point, well, no, I've not been doing it. Well, that's the thing then, isn't it? Muppet. It only works if you do it. So when we get round to the point, energy as well. Can I just talk about energy? Because it's a big thing at the moment that I'm following a line of inquiry about energy, and my enthusiasm was heightened, I think, when I read, I can't remember, I wish I'd kept the cutting, or I might have to look it up academically, but basically, there's this line, this energy line that we're all on from 0 to 10. So 0 is when you're dead, and you've got no energy at all, and 10 is when you're off the scale, like Tigger, but which is ridiculous, bouncing around, annoying people. So the extremes, naught's not good because you're dead, 10's not good because you're just going to annoy people. But the theory says we're all on that energy spectrum somewhere between naught and 10. And they'd surveyed thousands and thousands of people in the UK, and they reckon we're averaging as a society, we're averaging a 3. So most people are like...
just above dead.
Yes, a million miles away. Now, I'm not suggesting we need to be a 10. 10's ridiculous. But maybe if we could just get people from a 3 to a 7 or an 8. And we actually, yeah. I mean, this is the afternoon. This morning, Andy and I have been delivering a training day for some teachers. And I think they started the day on about a 3 because it was the first day back in September and didn't want to be there. But I think what we have managed to do is move them to a 7 or an 8 by the end of the day, or in fact, within the first half hour. And they realise, actually, by being at that end of the energy spectrum, you're going to have more of a sparkle in your eye. You're going to have more of a spring in your step. You're going to have more of a pizzazz. And therefore, you're going to be sort of infectiously, positively... It's got to be better. It's not the wrong...
infectious.
You don't want to go infecting... No, no. Let's retract.
Well, no, it is. No, infected's all right. You're infecting him with the right thing.
Yeah. But too many teachers that I've seen, we've been doing work in other schools, I better not mention, where, remember that school we did where there's that woman bellowing, all that bloke bellowing at them? Me and Andy are in a class doing the hot bean brew with these recalcitrant 15-year-olds. And next door, for 40 minutes, I've got a teacher just shouting at the top of his voice how stupid the kids were for 40 minutes.
I thought we'd been put in a time machine and gone back to Victorian times. It was awful
for us. It was awful for him. It must have been awful for the kids as well. But, I mean, I don't know what drove him to that. I don't know the circumstances, so I better not badmouth it too much. But can I tell you a very quick way of getting from a number 2 on your scale to a number 8?
Drink.
Well, drugs, yeah. Thanks for that, mate, yeah. Drugs and alcohol is chocolate and caffeine. All substances that we can take, but we're not going to recommend those.
Anyway, thanks for listening.
Go get drunk. That's obviously the solution. No, seriously. I know you've heard me tell this one before, but I like this a lot. I did some work at one of the county councils recently, well, just before Christmas, actually, and a lady lent me a book on the way out, and she was lovely. She was a really good delegate. But I was in a rush, so I didn't really chat to her. She just thrust this book into my hand and she said, can you read it and let me know what you think? So I said, yeah, of course I can. And she disappeared without me really having a chat to her. I got home and got the book out of the bag. And there's a book on Buddhism. Now, I'm not averse to any sort of religious stuff. I don't know about religion. I don't know anything about any religion at all. I'm coming at this from a science point of view. But I promised her that I was going to review it.
Is that big cross you brought with you? Yeah.
No. Stop putting me off. So I read the book, and I remember propping myself up in bed that night because I promised I was going to review it. And I read the first page, and it said, the very first page, it said, what you need to do is wake up every morning being really grateful that you haven't got toothache. And I thought, that's just pathetic. That's rubbish. What nonsense book is this going to be? If it's just like that, I'm not going to bother reading it. But then I thought about that a lot. In fact, I couldn't stop thinking about that, how actually... when you do think about it, how profound it is. And I thought about it so much that I thought, well, it's in the doing it. It's got to be the next thing. So I started to do it. Right? And I don't think I don't want to be sort of a weirdo or, dressing in the robes and chanting the mantras and all that kind of stuff. But I can honestly say that from January onwards, the alarm goes at 6 a.m. in our house. It's dark. It's miserable outside. It's cold. You can hear the wind howling around the chimney pots. And you don't want to get out of bed. You get out of bed into the darkness. Of the morning, and I immediately, hand goes to my jaw. Ooh, fantastic, no toothache. What a great start to the day. And that simple thought process, matey, takes me from a 2, don't want to get out of bed, to a 7. Thank God I can get out of bed, because it isn't just toothache. It's your kidneys. When was the last time you thanked your kidneys? Aren't they fantastic?
Wonderful.
Have you still got yours? You've had to sell one. Yeah. I mean, there's a few financial problems. I don't know if he's fully kidneyed. So that's probably a bad taste. but your kidneys, when was the last time you thanked your kidneys?
I do it regularly now, yeah.
You do it regularly now, yeah. But all your bits of your body, and the fact that, right, without, I sometimes people accuse me of maybe preaching at them a bit here in terms of, I believe this so much, but I have recently begun to put a value on getting out of bed. Right, I figured one day I won't be able to get out of bed. Now, while I can, I'm going to make sure that it's a joyous thing to be able to get out of bed. Yeah,
I think my own experience of that, it was really kind of profound for me. I'd heard you tell that story maybe 2 years ago or so. And I had my dad down about three months ago.
sorry.
And he set off back up to Morecambe. And he's obviously got a mobile phone, but my dad suffered with polio when he was in the army. So he's kind of lost the use of one of his arms. So he set back off home. And he was due to arrive probably about 6:30. And he always rings me as soon as he get in. And he'd not run by 7. And I didn't want to ring him on his mobile, because obviously if he answers his mobile, he has to steer with his ears. So, but which I only worked out from another time I'd spoken to him on the way down. I said, "Hey, Daddy, you all right?" He said, "Yeah, yeah, not bad, you know." I said, "He said, I better go, son." He said, "I can't steer while I'm on phone." So I didn't want to ring, and then it came about 7:30, and I was always getting really, really worried. But then as soon as the phone call came through, it was an absolute elation of happiness. And it's so now every time I get up and I think, wow, my dad's here. Mm. And I'm going to enjoy, you know, sometimes people, you know, they come, I've got to go and see my parents, or I've got to go and see so-and-so, and this, that, you know, and it's like, well, you've got them. Make the most of So I think we take so much for granted. And I think, what was that guy when you did in one of the courses, write down 10 things that you take for granted.
Oh, one of the things that we do, we call it the most important things in the world. It's if you do this now, write down, get a pen and paper, write down a list of 10 things that you really appreciate in life, but that you take for granted. And we'd sometimes do that in the workshop. Yeah, we've had some great answers.
People to think, doesn't it, and actually connect with.
Yeah, and what you normally, what you typically get, I can guess your top three already. Yeah, I think health will be in there, in probably number one, and two and three will be people of some description. Yeah, except with that guy at Ginster's. I've just given him a quick mention. I can't remember his name. He was brilliant. He did his 10 things, and I went round and had a look. And his number one list on the 10 things you really appreciate but you take for granted. Number one was tinned salmon. Which it was just above his wife and kids.
you thought he's taking the mickey here, but he was that passionate about it. Are you sure? He's like, yeah, it's salmon, right? And it's in a tin. Oh, yeah. So you just open it, and there it is. And it's your list. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So
he had the passion.
Yeah, he's a good lad. So energy and the way that you think, and it's the ready break thing as well. Who are just explain the ready break philosophy, because I don't know, the aims of the course, the aims of this CD almost really are to do with, if you go back to 1980s, there was a ready break before your time, mate. When were you born, by the way?
74.
No way.
Yeah, just sponsored by Oil of Ule.
74.
It's all this positive thinking, mate. It makes you a lot young.
So, ready rec advert in the 80s, I remember it well. Central Heating for Kids was the strapline, and there's nice country kitchen scene with mum making ready rec, little boy eating his ready rec at the kitchen table, and it's snowing outside. You can see the snow falling, and he develops a glow on the outside. I don't know if you can remember it, but he goes out to play in the snow with his mates. And what became clear, thinking back now, is that his mates haven't had their ready break because they haven't got the glow. And they're all out there freezing to death. They're like, "Oh, isn't it cold? Isn't it miserable? Don't you just hate this weather?" And this little fella with the glow is completely different. He's like, "Isn't it great to be alive? Isn't it great not to have toothache? Shall we? He didn't say that, but he was thinking it for sure.
He was thinking it, definitely.
Shall we go sledging? Shall we build a snowman? Shall we have a snowball fight?" So enthusiastic. And the thing about him, he was tangibly different. You could see that he was different. He spoke differently.
His mates,
don't spoil my story. He's it's the glow, isn't it? Where does the glow come from? The glow is nothing to do with ready break. It's to do with how you think. It's to do with how you feel, actually. And how you think, obviously, it's got implications for how you feel. And the reason why you 1970s, 1980s kids haven't seen that advert is it got taken off. There was an incident in 1986 in Chernobyl in the Ukraine where a nuclear reactor exploded. And unfortunately, that glow wasn't seen to be such a healthy thing. So
I know about that because we were going on a family holiday to Romania. Which is next door. And,
you were going on a family holiday to Romania?
Yeah, to Romania, literally, when it happened.
You got some sort of Romany blood?
No, I think it was cheap. No, it was really interesting, actually. Count Dracula and all that. Yeah, we did all the castle and everything. But I remember they said they were panicking about going, and they gave us a warning, and they said, "You'll be fine as long as it doesn't rain and don't eat any barbecued meats, and you'll be fine." It peed it down for 14 days, and all we had was barbecues every night inside.
That explains a lot, mate. You have got a strange glow.
Thanks, mate.
I thought it was brilliant.
It's a good holiday, that. It's radiation. I recommend Romania. Yeah,
excellent. So, lack of toothache, thanking your kidneys, getting out of bed, putting a value on being alive. I mean, one thing, I went to see Richard Wilkins, and I thought he was an inspirational bloke, actually. The Ministry of Inspiration, I think, is his website, if anybody's interested. But he asked a question. He said, I'll give you a choice, he said, and he holds his hands up. He says, I'll give you £1 million or not be dead. If you ask that of a big corporate audience, there's normally a stunned silence while they're thinking about it. But I mean, it doesn't take too much thinking about it. I think most sane people listening to this CD will take the not be dead option. You're thinking about it.
I was trying to think. How could I be dead and spend it?
Wealth is nothing really. These positive people that we've surveyed, that we've been researching, they're not mega millionaires. It's not Richard Branson. In fact, he's got almost diddly squat to do with income.
Some are. It's not. I wouldn't say money's. I think money always causes a lot of conversation, kind of debate, because I think a lot of people believe money will make them happy.
Absolutely.
And it's. I think if you know your personal development, you will have heard this probably 100 times, but it's worth repeating. They did a survey in California, which is the biggest lottery in the world, the biggest payout. And over 80% of the winners since it started, and I believe it started kind of a long time ago, way before our lottery, over 80% of the winners have actually ended up with less than they started with, and 90% of the winners wished they'd not have won.
Mm.
So that kind of is a big thing.
I've been reading up on that kind of stuff.
Money doesn't, we do one-to-one coaching with people, don't we? And a lot of some of the kind of clients I get, they're usually on average, this is a generalisation, will be about mid-40, earning very good money, usually kind of high up in the corporate ladder or managing directors of their own businesses. And they've been chasing the almighty buck for all these years, thinking, hey, presto, that will make me happy, career.
Just remind me of Jimmy's Diary in a minute, I'll tell that one.
Yeah, and then they get to a stage and go, oops, I'm not happy.
Yeah.
And, you know, they might have been through relationships, they might not then have the relationships with the kids if they have them, or whatever it is, it dawns on them, this thing they've been chasing actually isn't what they were after. They'd not taken the time to kind of enjoy the journey, so to speak. So, but having said that, money, I'm not saying money is a bad thing. I think it was one of Anthony Robbins' books. He says, money won't make you happy, but it's nice to turn up to your problems in a limo.
Nice.
And I thought, yeah, it's. Nice. I think money's a good thing. I think if you want money, that's great, but it's not going to make you happy, and you can be as happy without it. And I think Richard Wilkins says it, because all the feelings are already in us, aren't they?
Yeah.
Not about something's not going to make you happy. You can feel it anytime. It's just that we think we have to wait for something to come along.
I could talk forever on this, mate, but I better not. But there's lots and lots of research that shows that we are now sort of... we're going for the last... Hang on, last jelly baby.
Oh, sorry.
Purple one or green one, mate?
There's two. Oh, I'll go for purple one.
Well, you've just had your fingers all over it now, haven't you? Right, I'll have the green one.
Yeah,
right. Hang on 1 sec. We just have the last jelly babies. Can you talk amongst yourself?
That's
mate?
It. I think you do Jimmy's Diary, which is the bit out of the book. Now, not that we're here to plug the book.
Are we not?
Being brilliant. Six
available
six
in
steps.
All where?
Oh, yeah.
No, I'll tell Jimmy's Diary. I've never actually told this story. I've given it out as something to read, but it makes me feel a bit teary. Actually, I'll try not to blub while I'm telling it. But Jimmy's Diary is a great story. I don't know. Hopefully, I can tell it okay. You have to picture the scene: that old fella up in his loft, up in his attic. And there's a window and some cobwebs, and he's not been up there for a long time. He's old fellow, his knees are creaking, and he's looking for a photograph. He's going through his photo albums from years ago. He's looking for one particular photograph of his wife, who's the story makes it clear that she's died. She's passed away, and he's after this photograph, this special photograph with that smile. So it's a very special one. And he's looking through it. And as he's, you know what it's like when you look at old photos, you get kind of time disappears and you get lost in your memories, don't you? And it takes him back to, you know, his family growing up in that house, that kind of thing, as he's uncovering all these photographs. And he finds his lad's diary, Jimmy's diary, from when he was about 6 or 7 years old. It's sort of scrawled in crayon on the front. It says Jimmy's Diary. And he starts to leaf through it and reading some of the entries. And he didn't even know his son kept a diary. So he's leafing through it and he's got this wry smile and his heartstrings are being tugged. He reads about things like, you know, his football matches and his arguments with his sister and the times that he... Also, what he did at school, that kind of stuff. And this old man has this kind of... He can't remember these things that were going on in his son's diary. So he has a thought and he takes the diary downstairs. He creaks his knees downstairs, down to his office... where he keeps his business diary. from the past. Obviously, he's now retired. And he puts the key into the thing and he opens it up and he gets out the business diary from this, around the same era. And he looks at one of the entries. He looks for, through his diary and it's absolutely chock-a-block full of appointments, you know, day and night even. And he thinks, well, I worked so hard because it was for the family that I did it. It was the earning the income so that Jimmy could go to university and that kind of stuff. So he understands why he worked so hard. And he leafs through to June the 23rd and he has a look and it says, went fishing with Jimmy. Wasted a day, didn't catch a thing, or something like that. And then he quickly, feverishly turns to Jimmy's diary, June the 23rd, and it says, went fishing with my dad. Best day of my life.